Hello and welcome to another episode of Chasing Excellence. Every week here on the show, Ben and I dedicate some time to exploring how we can live a life of better health and increased fulfillment. We answer your questions about the five factors of health, dive deep on living a life of excellence, and explore the strategies and frameworks to help us chase what truly matters. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I'm here with just a quick introduction. We haven't done this in a hot minute. We're going to do a benchmark. Benchmark is just when I go through the archives of the show, of the handful of years we've been doing this, and find an episode that is worth resurfacing and revisiting. And this time around, I selected an episode based entirely on a random clicking of YouTube. I was on YouTube and I got curious as to see which of the episodes that we've done since 2016 has the most views. And I found it, and it's this episode, and it's all about recovery. So I thought, for no other reason than that, we would revisit it. The things Ben and I talk about, this is from June of 2019, for those who are interested. And also for those who are interested and maybe didn't know, we do upload every single episode of the show to YouTube. So if you would like to see our faces while we talk, you can certainly do that. Just search for Chasing Excellence in YouTube and you'll find us. Here are the things we talked about in this episode from all the way back in June of 2019. We talked about the distinction between soreness and pain, benefits of self-myofascial release, how active recovery exercises can enhance recovery, strategies for optimizing the recovery process, and the role of recovery in maximizing performance. Before we get into the episode, just a few words of thanks from our sponsors. We're brought to you this week by OneSkin. Are you ready to give your skin the gift of radiance this holiday season? Look no further than OneSkin, the revolutionary skincare brand that targets skin aging at the source. As a listener of our show, you can enjoy an exclusive 15% off all OneSkin products using the code excellence at oneskin.co. With their groundbreaking peptide OS1, OneSkin is scientifically proven to prevent the accumulation of aged senescent cells, the primary culprit behind skin aging. OneSkin is not your average skincare brand. Unlike other products on the market that only provide temporary results, OneSkin focuses on addressing the root causes of aging. Their cutting-edge R&D platform and clinical studies have shown that the OS1 peptide can reverse the biological age of skin by reducing the number of senescent cells by up to 50%. I use their products every single morning and can attest that it delivers on its promise of healthier, more youthful looking skin. So invest in your skin and start your journey to skin longevity today. Visit oneskin.co. Use the code excellence for 15% off your purchase. That's oneskin.co with the code excellence. Remember, the new year is approaching and there's no better time to prioritize your skin's health. So age healthy with OneSkin. We're also brought to you this week by Momentous. If you're interested in improving your sleep and recovery, and of course you are, we gotcha. Visit livemomentous.com and use the code excellence to get 20% off your first order. Are you having trouble getting a good night's sleep? Well, Momentous has the perfect solution. Their sleep pack is a 30-day supply containing three natural ingredients that have been scientifically formulated to enhance the quality of your sleep. Let me tell you, the benefits are fantastical. I don't know if that's a word. The combination of magnesium, L-threonate, apigenin, and L-theanine will help you fall asleep quicker, stay asleep longer, and wake up feeling refreshed. Here's something perhaps you didn't know, something called sleep onset latency, which is how long it takes to fall asleep. On average, it should take you about 10 to 20 minutes to fall asleep once you turn the lights out. If you're on the high side of that range or beyond it, the sleep pack is what you need. In the gentlest way possible, it will basically punch you in the face with sleep. As a special offer for our listeners, Momentous is giving you a 20% discount on your first order. Go to livemomentous.com. Use the code excellence at checkout. Remember, getting quality sleep is crucial for your overall well-being and performance. We talk about it all the time here. Don't miss out on this opportunity to optimize your sleep and recovery with Momentous. Livemomentous.com. Use the code excellence to get that 20% off your first order. All right, my friends, without any further ado, here is a younger me and a younger Ben talking all about recovery. Today, we're going to dive deep into an area of focus that we've touched on certainly in lots of different episodes. And that subject matter is recovery, specifically recovery from your training. We recently did an episode about all the top trends that we've seen come and sometimes go within CrossFit, and somebody sent me a message saying that they were hoping that we'd touch on recovery specifically. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really good idea because, again, we haven't put a nail on it specifically before. So I wanted to enter into the conversation with maybe your, delineation between the five factors that we've talked about quite a bit for let's call it general population, and then the five factors that I've heard you talk about plenty to comp trainers or to athletes like Catherine. And those. They're very similar, but they differ in some pretty specific ways, including recovery. So can we maybe start there and talk to me about why there's a difference between what I need personally and what Cole needs?
Yep. You're up there with Cole. You guys are in the same category. Yeah. All right. So the five factors, what that reference is the five things that I believe are within your control that truly create excellent health, right? So if you're trying to push off the nursing home and live a disease-free state, these are the things that I believe are the things that you should be focusing on. And the first two are obvious, what your doctor talks about all the time. And we've talked about on this podcast a fair amount, which is your exercise and nutrition. From there, it's also about your sleep. It's about your mindset. So do you believe that you live in a hostile or friendly world? You know, Albert Einstein's question. And then the last one is the connection. Mm-hmm. Do you have meaningful relationships in your lives? That's amazing. That's going to produce excellent health. There are a couple other factors that you don't have control over, but certainly influence your health, things like genetics and environment and other things. But these are things that we want our athletes, and I use the term athletes in terms of anybody that's a member of my gym or that I'm speaking to. We want those people to be focusing on those five things to help move the needle for them in terms of longevity, health, and avoiding disease and living a productive, meaningful, functional life. For our athletes, and when I'm saying athletes in this term, I'm talking about our elite athletes who earn a living by their athletic performance. These are people that are professionals or striving to be professional athletes. In that case, things get shifted a little bit. And the way they prioritize things has more to do with optimal performance than longevity. We might be sacrificing some long-term results for some short-term gains. And we're okay with that. It's kind of the idea like the average NFL player takes 5 years off of their life.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's a choice they're making, and they're living this amazing life of living their passion and becoming a professional athlete. For these guys, what I try to focus on, and we call this the process. This is the process. Can you focus with everything you have on these five things, and as best as you can, let everything else fall off your shoulders? Because essentially, everything else is either outside your control or will not move the needle for you in terms of your athletic performance. There's some overlap, but there's a little bit of differences. The overlap is that it's still about your nutrition. It's obviously still about your training. It's about your sleep as well. But we actually separate another category away from sleep, which is recovery. And that's kind of where we are. Then the mindset is the other one that's kind of overlaps as well. So we actually kind of say that recovery is so important for these athletes, because for an everyday me, you, and an everyday soccer mom and dad and CEO trying to get fit, they're not putting their bodies through enough stress to elicit enough that the game is how fast can you recover. And if they don't recover enough, like you just kind of like move the needle the next day. The game for these elite athletes is literally how much stress can you put under your body, rinse, wash, repeat, day after day after day after day. Because what happens is the greater the stress, the greater the response, as long as you allow your body to recover in between. So there is this kind of recovery and adaptation cycle. So if you think of this in terms of a graph, when you're training, you're actually getting weaker. Mm-hmm. You're getting less fit. You are going to be able to produce less optimal results. That sounds really weird, but it makes sense. If I say, Patrick, I want you to run a mile as fast as you can, and you cross the finish line, sprinting to the finish line, and collapse at the end, you run a 6-minute mile. I'm like, actually, Patrick, let's do that again right now. Well, the next mile is, you're not going to get faster. Right. You're going to get slower. Your next mile might be 6:30 or 7 minutes, and who knows, or somewhere in between. But your performance is going to go down. Mm-hmm. If I say, no, actually, let's do it again, it's going to get worse. So when you train, you actually get worse. Now, if you allow enough time, and that time is dictated by a number of different factors, and we'll kind of dive into this, but if you allow yourself enough time, then during that recovery process is when you get stronger. If I say run a mile as fast as you can, and then I ask you to do it next week, mm-hmm. you may get faster.
Right.
But if I ask you to do it next minute, no way. Next hour, probably even not likely. Next day, I don't know. 3 or 4 days later, yeah. maybe, yeah. right? So that's the idea, is are you putting enough time to allow your body to recover to create a super compensation? Your body adapts because it knows the stress it's going to be under and it gets better at it. Now, what we can do through this recovery tools and protocols and focus is shorten up that time.
Mm-hmm.
And if we shorten up that time, you get more exposures, you get fitter. That's why recovery is so important. It is, I mean, he who recovers fastest wins the CrossFit games, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. If you're smart and you work hard, it's basically like if you recover faster, you can do more training than I can, and you're going to beat me.
Mm-hmm. Is that the case that you've seen at the top of the games that the athletes who are, and so today's episode, I've collected a list of, I don't know, it's 10 or 12 different tactics that a person can take to recover faster. Have you seen in your experience at the top of the games that in fact the athletes who are continuously there are doing these ideas or tactics more frequently? Like what is the, if that's the case, what is it that they're doing that other people aren't?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. So, if you recover faster, you can come into the gym and have a more productive session the next day. But in competition, this is obvious, right?
Right.
You have event number one in the morning. If you don't recover for 3 days, like you're not going to compete at the CrossFit games. We need to be ready to go again in hours, if not minutes, right. depending on the event. So it's also about like how fast can you perform to create another high performance output. So it's both like he who recovers the fastest earns the greatest training adaptation, but it's also preparing you for the demands of the sport during the sport. So in football, you have 4 to 6 seconds and a 40-second recovery. 4 to 6 seconds and a 40-second recovery. Well, if you don't recover in the 40 seconds, like you're going to get worse and worse and worse right. and worse. You have to be able to go super high output. And then likewise, you have to rinse, wash, repeat that for a 3 to 12 play drive. And then you get another recovery while the defense comes on the yep. field. And then you got to be able to do that for 4 quarters. So you kind of learn the demands of the sport. Yeah. And you kind of work within those constraints.
It makes me think of hockey where they're totally, continually yeah. wave of new athletes coming
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Yeah. So what those guys do really well is 45 seconds of high burst output with about a 2-minute recovery. Yeah. And that's a really, like, think if you just did that for your training, like 45 seconds, max effort, 230 recovery. Like you get pretty darn fit. Yeah. That's why hockey players are pretty darn fit.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, in terms of the recovery, there's another, we can take a little deeper dive because it's not just about like what we were just talking about was like hockey. It's like there's metabolic or like the aerobic system that needs to recover. There's muscular, which is that kind of like the dreaded DOMS, the mm-hmm. DOMS. Onset. Yeah. Delayed onset muscle soreness, which can come in, 8 to 36 hours. And then there's a third one, which gets overlooked a lot, which is essentially kind of this psychological components, but it's really kind of how your body interprets stress, which is the nervous system. And the nervous system takes inputs and figures out what to do with that. Yeah. And should I be in rest and digest in total chill mode and hormones do one thing, or am I in fight or flight? And should I be freaking out and getting adrenaline going and cortisol and getting my performance indicators up and running? Those three things. So if you run the 800, right? Your terrible metabolic race. One, terrible race, right? Yeah. Or like the 600 hurdles or something like that. Like your metabolic is going to be through the roof, right? But you're not going to be necessarily very sore.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it in training, your CNS won't be fried. But if you do that at the Olympics, your CNS might be fried.
Yeah.
So the CNS can also be affected by a lot of other things. Like the other kind of thing to think there is like maybe your CNS get fried, but the other ones don't. If you have to give a presentation, right, to a group of 300 people, you're going to do a commencement speech.
Mm-hmm.
Like just me set talking to you right now, like, Patrick, I'd like you to give the commencement speech to Stanford University this year. Your mm-hmm. heart rate is going to start mm-hmm. to elevate right now. That's a response to this kind of like fight or flight. Your CNS is changing and shifting. Your hormones are doing different things. When you experience any one of these three things, you need to create the buffer for the recovery. And if you don't do that, you end up crashing and burning. Either you get injured, you your performance continues to go down and down and down. That's called overtraining. Or your CNS gets fried and you just kind of like implode, right? Where it's like you can't figure out why.
Yeah.
You can't figure out why, but bad things are happening. And I've worked with athletes that before I took real kind of note of this stuff and I didn't understand it. And when I was working with these athletes, I would have them go through a really stressful experience and they get right back to training and things like their hair would start falling out. Huh. Like it's not like the CNS thing's for real.
Yeah.
It's not just like my muscles aren't sore. I'm not breathing heavy. Let's go, coach. Like put me in. It's, you have to take note of all three of those things equally. They're equal parts of the pie.
Interesting. Okay. So like I said, I've sort of collected a 10 or 12, things that we've talked about in brief before. Mm-hmm. Some a little deeper than others, but I'm just going to run down the list. They're not in any order. Okay. So the first one is just lacrosse or foam rolling, which is pretty, pretty common and certainly a lot of people have done before.
Okay. So this is the kind of fancier word for that is self myofascial release. And fascia is this stuff like in your body that you're just trying to like release, right? So think of it as like scar tissue or tight muscles or gunkiness. You are using an object, in this case, either foam rolling or lacrosse ball or something else, a supernova ball. There's a whole bunch of these. Okay. You could even put like maybe like a Graston or something like in there. Even like those like canes that you use to like kind of grind out your back, like all those things are the same thing. It's a poor man's massage.
It's a substitute for a human with two hands.
Yeah. And it's a great substitute, right? It's a phenomenal substitute. If a massage is $100 an hour, like I don't know many people that are gonna be able to do that every single day.
Right.
So this is a tool that you could easily use before or after your training for, you know, 2 minutes on a gunky area, up to 20 minutes for a total body thing to kind of work some things out. So that is a tool that can help get you back to better performance.
Active recovery is the next one.
Okay, so active recovery, what that's referring to is you do a workout like in CrossFit, Karen, like 150 wall balls and your legs are just smashed the next day. You're so sore. The domes, right? The delayed onset muscle soreness, you have trouble going upstairs and getting off the toilet and you're sore to the touch. What most people do there is like take a day off of the gym. That's actually not the most productive thing to do. The more productive thing to do is go to the gym. Don't do the workout of the day, but start moving. Mm. Jump on a bike, then do some active full range of motion stuff like Spider-Man's. Then try to hold onto a pole and try and work your way down below parallel. Then grab a very light kettlebell and do some Russian swings. Then get back on the bike and then rinse, wash, repeat, then some new things. Some dowel passovers if it's your shoulders. So what we're looking for there is range of motion and blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
That will actually speed things up in terms of recovery, not set you back. Now, if you come in and you're sore to the touch and you're like, screw it, I'm a baller. I'm going to do 5x5 back squats and I'm going to do a bunch of sled pushes and I'm going to do, some crazy big mech, like that's going to set you back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's active recovery is working through kind of like, if we're talking about in terms of the aerobic system, zones 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Zone 1 is where we are right now. It's rest.
Yep.
Zone 2 is where we're working, but you could hold a conversation without really having to think about taking breaks.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of heart rate, for most of us, that'd be like around 120 beats a minute, somewhere around there. Zone 3 would be like, we're working, but I could have a conversation. I just have to take a breath or two in between. Maybe your heart rate's in the 145s.
With you in that
different zone. Zones. You like just tell me different zones to be in. Zone 4, we could talk, but it'd be really broken up.
Yep.
It would be, yes, Patrick, I'm in zone 4. And your heart rate's probably, you know, the 160s, 170s. Zone 5 is like your peak. It's your VO2 max.
Don't
it's 185. And you ask you a question and I'm not even giving you body language. I'm not even smiling. I'm not nodding. I'm kind of like focused on my thing. In terms of active recovery, it's zone 2 stuff. We want to be in zone 2 and that's where the recovery stuff happens. Even zone 1 can get you there. So even like just like total chill mode, but we're moving can get you there.
Maybe it's a big question, but when do you know, or when does an athlete know that soreness, should ideally require active recovery versus just soreness that is okay and I'm going to go hit today's workout as well. Is there an easy way to know when you wake up, like, oh, this is an active recovery day, or I'm sore, but I can work out again?
So soreness is a good thing. We want soreness is okay. The funny one is, like, people wake up and their back is sore. Mm-hmm. Like, after your back being sore, it's like, it's a good thing. That means you're growing the muscles. Now, there's a difference between soreness and pain. Yep. So if you are taking steps and you're feeling pain shooting through your knee, that's different than soreness.
Right.
Soreness is your muscles. You're like, ooh, those things worked. And if you can kind of like grab the muscle and kind of move it, and it kind of actually feels kind of good, that means that it's probably on the track of, like, that's the right amount of stimulus the day before. If you go to, like, grab your quads and you're like, and it hurts, that's the indicator, like, you went too far.
Okay.
And we should definitely not be training those until we're back towards that kind of like light soreness type thing.
Every time I think of Karen, I think of Matt Frankel at the games that year with everybody on the team had one, and did he succeed at getting all
150? He did not go unbroken at that time, but he probably would have, but he had a whole bunch of no reps. Okay. Not his fault, because I'm his coach in the stands.
Yep.
And this is early CrossFit.
Yeah, this is like 11, maybe 12.
Yeah, so it's the year we won the CrossFit games. Super cool. And he was, no one was doing everyone does Karen unbroken now. Back then, that would have been like ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he's getting these no reps, and I'm like, Matt, just throw it higher. Just throw it higher. Because back in the day, it was just like you just had to get it at or above a 10-foot target. And I was like, just throw it. You're getting no reps. Just throw it higher. And I didn't know that it had to actually, for the games, one of the first times they held the standard, you have to hit the target.
Got it.
And I'm like, so yelling it. I'm screaming. I'm like, it's like, and I'm giving him bad coaching advice.
Okay, so active recovery. And then the next on my list is total rest. And I think maybe part of your answer, if you could answer this, would be, when do you know, the classic CrossFit sort of prescription is 3 days on, 1 day off. Is that 1 day off an active recovery day, or is that a total rest day?
Yep.
How do you know when one is called for, when the other is called
Love
for?
Love it. So the traditional CrossFit model was you work out on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you take Thursday off, and then you work out another 3 days, and you take another day off, you work out another 3 days, take another day. The idea behind that is it's a sustainable workload for a long period of time. Now, that's a prescription for the masses, mm-hmm. and most people are going to see that's a pretty safe prescription for the masses. But it's not a prescription for you.
Mm-hmm.
You might thrive under something very, very different. You might thrive under working super hard for 2 days and taking a day off, and then working super hard for 2 days and taking a day off. Our competitors, their normal protocol, I'm going to get to your question of is it active? What I do is I work out 5 days in a row and take 1 day completely off.
Got it.
That's what's worked really well for me for the last 3 or 4 years. The majority of our competitors work 3 days, do an active recovery, work 2 days, and then take a full day of recovery. So they're doing both on those recovery days.
Yep.
So if it's a normal week, call it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is on. Thursday is an active recovery where they maybe go to the gym and do something light, or they do a light swim or yoga or something like that. And then Friday, Saturday, they're back to hitting it hard. And Sunday is a total recovery day. That total recovery day is really nice because it allows for that third category we talked about, which is the nervous system to kind of chill the heck out. I'm not under total stress. I'm not under the gym. I'm not even like in a gym. Yeah. I get to like kind of like relax and recover, rest and digest.
Got it. Cool. Next one is the classic stretching.
Okay, so stretching has its place. Like if you're doing certain training, your muscles may get tight, right? And if you can get them back to full range of motion, that can help. So stretching is good. And we can talk about whether that's like Ramwad or Kelly Starrett stuff or yoga. They all have their place. Mm-hmm. And any one of those things is cool. But it's a thing that stretching for the sake of stretching, it might not be the most productive thing, because if you already have full range of motion, you're just stretching to stretch.
Yeah.
You know, stretching certainly has its place in a lot of recovery protocols. And the biggest thing to think about is if you wake up and you don't feel like you have full range of motion, you doing what, fill in the blank of what you feel like stretching is that active, is that active range of motion stuff? Is it yoga? Is it whatever that might be? you getting back to through and your form of stretching back to full range of motion is a powerful tool.
So would you recommend people do it first thing in the morning if that's something that they feel like they need and or want?
So the protocol is you could do it.
Or is there like a do it after your workout?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. So I would say that after your workout, I think a really powerful thing to do is to do some light stretching, restore full range of motion along with some active self-myofascial release. So those type of things can help as well. If I had to choose the foam rolling self-myofascial stuff before or after training, I would put that before. Okay. If I had to choose static stretching, I would put that after.
Why is it? So you say that and I flash back to high school track and field. We always stretched before we did anything else, yep. Right? We got in a circle and even pretty much any sport.
Yep.
Why is it that, was that the case? Is it still the case? And yep. Why isn't that maybe the right order of events in an ideal world?
It may still be the case in some places, but in a high level of athletics, you won't see that anymore. What you'll see is active stretching, mm-hmm. which is things like, I think about lunging and running with high knees yep. and arm circles. And what you're trying to do is bring your body through a full, active, controllable range of motion. What you don't want to do is sit there on the ground, put a leg out and try and bring your nose to your knee and create passive range of motion. Passive range of motion can be at best diminish performance because you're eliminating the stretch reflex, which is like as I go through a range of motion, there's an equal and opposite act force the other way. So if I'm sprinting and I drive an elbow back behind me, mm-hmm. that elbow then wants to come back forward and so on.
Yep.
Well, if you do a bunch of stretching, you diminish that stretch reflex. That's the best case scenario. So your performance goes down.
Yep.
The worst case scenario is you get hurt.
Right.
So what you'll see now more often is more active stretching beforehand. And then you may see, and you probably will see some more passive stretching afterwards.
Got it. Hello again, this is Patrick from the present, interrupting Patrick and Ben from the past. Quick word of thanks to a few more sponsors, and we're going to get back to the episode. We're brought to you this week with support from Element. I've got an exciting offer for you from Element. Right now, they're offering a free sample pack with any purchase. That's 8 single-serving electrolyte packets absolutely free with any Element order. Don't miss out on this opportunity to try all of their flavors or share Element with a friend. Just go to drinkelement.com/excellence and get yours. If you're looking for a tasty and effective way to replenish your electrolytes, look no further than Element, the ultimate electrolyte drink mix. With everything you need and nothing you don't, Element offers a powerful punch without any added sugar or artificial ingredients. Electrolytes play a crucial role in our body, facilitating hundreds of functions like nerve impulses, hormonal regulation, nutrient absorption, and fluid balance. Whether you're a professional athlete or not, electrolytes are essential for everyone. Element is formulated with a science-backed electrolyte ratio of 1,000 milligrams sodium, 200 milligrams potassium, and 60 milligrams magnesium. It's the perfect drink to help prevent and eliminate headaches, muscle cramps, fatigue, and other common symptoms of electrolyte deficiency. But what sets Element apart is its commitment to quality. No sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, no gluten, no fillers, no BS of any kind. It's a clean and effective electrolyte solution suitable for anyone following a keto, low carb, or paleo diet. Element is trusted and used by everyone from the NBA, NFL, and NHL players to Olympic athletes, Navy SEALs, and folks like you and I. Ready to experience the benefits of Element for yourself? Well, Element offers no questions asked refunds. That's right. If you are not satisfied, you can share it with a salty friend and they'll give you your money back. So why wait? Head to drinkelement.com/excellence and get started on your electrolyte journey today. I don't know if we need to be on an electrolyte journey, but you know what I'm talking about. We are also brought to you this week by Cozy Earth. If you're looking for perfect bedding to enhance your sleep quality, well, hello, I have an exclusive offer for you. Cozy Earth, a brand known for its luxurious and temperature-regulating bedding, is offering up to 40% off site-wide when you use the code EXCELLENCE. That's the entire website. Head to CozyEarth.com, get your hands on their premium bedding collection. Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Set was named one of Oprah's favorite things in 2018. They're not only soft and luxurious, but also temperature regulating, as I mentioned, ensuring you stay comfortable and feel extra fancy all at the same time. But Cozy Earth doesn't just stop at sheets. They've got a complete bedding collection from pillows to blankets, all designed to elevate your sleep experience. And the best part, you can sleep with confidence thanks to Cozy Earth's generous warranty. Cozy Earth's bedding is responsibly sourced and made from bamboo viscose, ensuring a luxurious and guilt-free sleep experience. And with their commitment to quality, you can trust that you're getting the best night's rest possible. So why settle for less? Visit CozyEarth.com today. Discover the softest, most luxurious sheets. Luxurious sheets is a hard combination of words to say. As remember, as a special offer to you, you can get up to 40% off site-wide when you use the code EXCELLENCE. Don't miss out on this exclusive opportunity to experience unparalleled comfort. CozyEarth.com. Transform your sleep experience with the softest and most luxurious bedding. All right, let's get back to the show. The next one is, it's Normatec, and I wonder if Normatec specifically or if there are a range of products that do similar things to the Normatec. So what the first question is, what is Normatec?
Yeah.
And then are there six other brands that are similar to it, or is Normatec doing something that's actually pretty unique and they're the only ones?
Yeah, so a Normatec unit are these essentially big sleeves that you can either put your arms into or your legs into.
Yep.
And then they pump them full of air to compress sections of the body in a systematic order. So what it does is it creates this kind of lymphatic, it kind of creates this drainage, it creates this oil change for the body. It's basically flushing the blood in and out of areas.
Got it.
It started in the medical community for people that had surgery to prevent from getting blood clots. Mm. So those people would wear stockings.
Yep.
So compression.
Yep.
And then they were given Normatec. I don't know if it's called Normatec, but they were giving Normatec units to make sure that the blood was continuing to flow, even if they were in their bed for a long period of time, even if they were immobile for whatever reason. That made its way because it worked. It worked to prevent people from getting blood clots and kept the blood flowing. What works in the athletic in the medical community transferred its way to the athletic community. And Normatec created a second, Normatec is a brand in the company, created a secondary, division product line for athletics.
Yep.
And we use it, it works. I particularly like it for the lower extremity stuff. The upper body one's just a little more awkward and you can't sit there on your phone or read as well because your arms don't mobilize. But the lower body one works really well to sit in there for 20 to 60 minutes to try and get these 3, 4, 5 extra kind of cycles of the game is blood works because it brings good stuff to areas and removes bad stuff. So when you work out, we already said that you're kind of damaging areas. Yep. You're creating possibly, you know, again, kind of best case scenario, you're just kind of creating some waste products, some lactic acid. Worst case scenario, maybe it's like you develop some scar tissue or, you know, some muscle breakdown, you know, that's worse than that. What blood flow can do is bring good oxygenated, clean blood to the area and remove the bad stuff. Normatec just helps speed that along a little bit. To answer the other part of your question is, I don't know if there's other players in the space or if Normatec has just done a ridiculously phenomenal job of owning the space. Mm-hmm. It's the ones that we use. We like it. The product continues to get better and better. This is not a plug for them. I'm not endorsed by them or anything like that. It's just, it's a product that I like that all of our elite athletes use.
Got it. The next one is Electric Stim, which I assume stands for electric stimulation.
Yes. Yes. That's it. That is what it stands for.
I went to
for.
Grad school.
So yes. You're a smart dude.
Very smart.
Wicked smart. It's a product that our elite athletes use. It's not very common used in like, I think everything we've talked about so far is kind of used by Normatec's kind of shifting more towards just like used by the elite athletes. And I don't know any of my regular everyday athletes that do e-stim, but all of my elite athletes do it. Mm. It again is the idea of getting blood flow. So you are getting a muscle to involuntarily contract and relax way, way, way more frequently than you could do any other which way, which then again drives more blood flow to the working area. So it's another mechanism you can use to bring good to the area and remove the bad. Mm-hmm. Some of the units are things like, you could probably help me out with this, but Compex, Mark Pro, Power Dot, all of those things. And they all have kind of their pluses and minuses for each one of those things.
Got it. Cool. The next one is cold showers or cold immersion.
Okay. So, if you, so cold showers and cold immersion can work. I'm not the expert in this. Mm-hmm. So, I think that the expert would be Wim Hof. Mm-hmm. Wim Hof is this, freak, you know, clowned Mount Everest in negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit in nothing but a shirt because he's done so much cold immersion and figured out how to work his mind to control his body. There's a whole, big school that lives under the cold immersion window that I'm not the expert to. I can speak to it in terms of recovery from athletic performance. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of two facets to that. But forget about like, I don't know enough about like brown fat. Like there's a, like these different kinds of fat that you can use. And so that's not me. What I can talk about is like after you work out, a lot of people have used ice. Like my shoulder is super sore. So they use ice. You see pictures after a game, these big packs of ice. Or, my take on that does not speed up recovery. Mm. I believe it slows down recovery because what we're trying to do is get blood flow, good, clean blood to the affected area. When you put ice on it, you're slowing that down. So my take on that is ice in that case for recovery is not as beneficial, but ice does play a place in terms of trying to bring down your body temperature. Mm-hmm. So if you are exercising, particularly in heat, if you are doing an event at the CrossFit Games, you're doing Murph, which mm-hmm. they did in 120 degrees, if you can bring your body temperature back down to normal 98 faster than your competitors, you're going to do better in the next event than your mm-hmm. competitors will, all else things being equal. Mm. So a cold immersion can help that out drastically. If you just kind of like sit in the sun and wait for it to come back down, you're not going to optimize that. So you can use cold to bring down internal body temperatures. In terms of targeted inflammation, I don't think it's the tool people think it is.
So I take a cold shower every day. Not by any means an expert, but the first time I did it was years and years ago, very early on. And
you do it every day?
Yeah, every morning. So my
have you missed a morning?
Oh yeah, of course. But okay. But 9 times out of 10, it's a cold shower. So usually I work out like 5 to 6 minutes. So usually I work out and then go right into a cold shower. But my first experience with a cold shower was in an early CrossFit workout that I was doing, the old CrossFit Boston, and John Gilson was my friend, but also the coach of the class. And he stopped me midway through the workout. He's like, "I think you're doing too much. I need you to go take a cold shower." And I was like, first of all, like what? Like everything, like nothing made sense, but I did. And honestly, I think it probably saved me from a very early case of rhabdo.
Yeah.
Cause it was like,
exhaustion or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it was. Cause it may have been something like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like, oh, he's serious about this. I should go.
So there is also like, there's the psychological effects. Yep. There's the brown fat thing. There's the metabolism and the immune system and all. It's a little bit outside the scope of where I'm kind of living, which is this athletic performance recovery place. So I encourage people to take the deeper dive, but I'm not that resource.
The next one is the flip side of that, which we've talked about a little bit in the top trends episode, is saunas. Mm.
So saunas can, again, like we just talked about in terms of like increasing blood flow, like if you heat things up, like blood flow is a little bit easier. It also like you will, everyone else has had this experience as well. It's like going like a hot yoga class and like, wow, I'm a little more bendy and stretchy than I used to be. It can restore kind of range of motion. You just have to be careful with saunas because, the right exposure can help recovery. Certainly through, you know, if you step it up enough, through HGH release, human growth hormone, which we talked about before.
Yeah.
But it's a sword. And you can get cut. Mm. If you go too long in it, you can get dehydrated and it's gonna make your recovery worse. There's again, kind of like the cold immersions, there's this other whole school of thought of like training in, it's what you wanna do is bring your assault bike in the sauna and do like, you know, 1 minute intervals in the sauna. And you know, that's like,
Next one is a big one, sleep, which we've talked about obviously a little bit at the beginning of the episode.
Okay. So sleep is its whole huge, massive thing. It's actually its own category unto itself for my athletes. It's so massively important that I don't even put it in the recovery thing because all these things we're talking about combined put together will not match up against your sleep.
Right.
The sleep by itself is more powerful than every one of these other dozen or so little tricks and trades. We've talked about it before, so we won't do the deep dive here, but the big ones are quality and quantity.
Yep.
There's a whole bunch of tips and tricks we can take. Check out the sleep episode if you want to take a deeper dive. But what we're looking for is anything less than 7 hours and you're hurting your recovery, you're getting worse, you're walking around creating mild brain damage. Let that sink in for a second. If you have above 7 hours, you're somewhere in the middle. The kind of matching number is at 7 to 9. Our games athletes, like Brooke is the best of sleep of the athletes I train, and she's hovers around the 10-hour mark all the time. You know, when James Hobart used to be on our team and train us, he was the notorious one that like he would say like sleep is it, guys. Like you, and he would sleep 10 hours, almost like he sleep like a vampire too. Yeah. He lived in my house. He would like lie on his back, totally flat, hands across his chest, not moving. It's like, and he had like quarters covering his eyes. It was really weird.
That's probably just because he's really lazy though. Okay. Nutrition is the next one. Another big one.
Okay. So nutrition is its own category as well, but it has to be talked about when we're talking about recovery. The big one there is, again, quality and quantity. Are you eating real foods? Processed foods will not help you recover. They'll do the opposite. They're going to hurt your recovery. Whole foods, because they're so nutrient dense and full of the vitamins and minerals and phytochemicals and fiber and all the other stuff, it's going to help so much in terms of your recovery process. If you have sore joints, start thinking about omega-3s and leafy greens. Those two things will help recovery a lot. So if you're like, I eat totally clean, but it's all chicken and steak tips, like you need to get some of the other stuff in as well.
Interesting.
And then from there is quantity as well, which you the biggest one for athletes in our sport is carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. We operate in a glycolytic sport, meaning that you're burning up your stored sugars, AKA carbohydrates. You got to replace those things. If you don't, you'll be operating at a deficit and you're not going to recover as well. Secondarily, it becomes a protein game, and that's pretty easy. You're trying to get in about 0.7 to 1.2 grams of protein per pound of body weight. So if you are a 200 pound guy, you just gained 30 pounds. Congratulations. Nice. Then you're looking to get in somewhere in the neighborhood of that, like, 140 to 200 grams of protein. And it's kind of like, okay, do you want to be a little bit leaner and smaller? Go on the lower side. No, I want to enter a bodybuilding competition to maximize my strength gains. Go on the higher end of that.
By and large, do you find that your athletes generally need to increase their intake of carbs and protein, or is that not true? Like, are they just not eating enough, generally speaking?
My elite athletes,
I would say, so anybody who's beyond just the
so here's the everyday athletes, the regular gym goers are eating too much. Mm-hmm. And then the elite athletes are not eating enough.
Got it.
So when we adjust their calorie and macronutrient breakdowns, we're almost always bringing the everyday Joes down. Mm-hmm. And we're almost always bringing the elite athletes up.
That's interesting. The next one is a float tank.
Okay, so
have you ever been in one of those?
I have actually never been in one. I would like to, but my athletes use them.
Yeah.
I believe, and I'm not an expert on this either, but I prescribe it for my athletes because I do believe in it. I believe it has a lot of benefits from the CNS perspective.
Mm.
So we spend a lot of our time unnecessarily in the fight or flight. So there's the parasympathetic nervous system and there's the sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is rest and digest. This is where you can chill and you can recover. Where most of us spend most of the time, unfortunately, and unnecessarily so, and it's in contrast to our evolutionary past, is in fight or flight. And it's not because we are like the elite athletes, we're training 8 hours a day. It's because you have this project to do. You're fighting traffic. Mm-hmm. You're late for a meeting. You're on social media. You're on this constant on. These float tanks are a form of sensory deprivation where you get into like this dreamlike state, and it's very meditative, and you can allow your body to truly, the idea behind it is you don't feel anything.
Mm.
There's no gravity. There's no noise. There's no light. there's sensory deprivation. So of the five senses, nothing, everything shuts off. Mm-hmm. It allows your body to totally chill. And what it's doing is really finding that parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm. This isn't on my list, but that is much of what we're talking about on some level, an act of reducing stress.
Yeah, absolutely. So stress is stress. It doesn't matter if it's coming from, you got this project due, if it's from like, you broke your leg, if it's from the training that you did, or if you had a fight with your wife. It does it like, it's all the same thing. Your body's responding to it by putting you into this sympathetic nervous system. Well, it's okay to be there. And I want you to be there. Stress is what makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we work out is because the stress from working out makes you stronger. I don't want you to go through the life with sunshine and rainbows. I want you to experience some levels of stress. That adversity is going to make you stronger. The problem is when we never come back down from it.
Right.
That's where recovery happens. And as I mentioned with the training, it's only in that recovery process that your body's allowed to get stronger and create a super compensation. Mm-hmm. If you are stressed from work and then you go home and you have a bad home life and then you go to the gym and you work out at crazy high intensities and then you come back home and all the way in between, you're either fighting traffic or you're doing text or you're doing business calls. Mm-hmm. And then you have this project due and someone spills coffee on you. It's like that. Yeah.
You're not going to recover.
You are not going to recover.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. The next one is we mentioned it briefly when we were talking about lacrosse balls and foam rolling being sort of an excuse or how to get around not having a human being giving you body work or whatnot. So where does that fit in?
The human being giving
you
body work?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. Yeah. I would say I've said this before, like if you win $1 gazillion and you're going to hire one person, mm-hmm. what would you hire? Like a chauffeur? Would you hire a chef? Would you hire a pilot? Would you hire someone to organize your life? I would hire a professional body worker. I mean, I think it's Tom Brady, right? Mm. With Alex Guerrero has somebody at his disposal all the time to work out all the kinks. That is a real thing. Like massage does kind of... two of the three things very well. So it's metabolic distress, muscle distress, and CNS. Well, the CNS, you're again getting this meditative state. You're like relaxed. Mm-hmm. There's no inputs. It's just like you're totally kind of chilling. Now, if you have somebody that's like digging into with a Grasson tool, you might go into fight or flight.
Yeah.
But in general, like a massage or something like that can be kind of this meditative state, which is really nice. But the other part, the obvious part is the muscle quality. So it's not just about muscle length and stretching it. It's actually about the quality of the muscle. So think about like Hero Dreams of Sushi type mm-hmm. thing. Like it's Matt, a great sushi chef. He's looking for the best quality meat of a salmon he can find. If it's damaged or it's bad, he doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing inside our bodies. You have muscles. It's not about one side. It's like how big and strong are they? But the other part is the quality. Are the muscles sliding and gliding over each other really well? Are the, I'm trying not to use sciencey things, but like, are the tendons and ligaments really healthy and strong? Mm-hmm. Professional body work does a wonders on moving the needle in that category. I would love to have access to that, on a daily basis. I get it done. It used to be once a week and now it's once every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I think that when I miss that now every 2 week thing, I feel it. Mm. And if I could do it more frequently, I would. It's just that it's time, but it's also that it's expensive.
Yeah. Maybe a dumb question, but is chiropractic, does that fit into that, that body work category?
So chiropractic is kind of this big all-encompassing term now. Yeah. So it used to be like snap and crack your back and adjust. Now it's, involves like, active release techniques and a lot of stuff in between. I would certainly put it in this category. You creating optimal alignment, and things do fall out of alignment. Chiropractic is not witchcraft, which you're like, you talk about somebody like in the 80s going mm-hmm. to like a chiropractor and they're like, oh my God. Like, but now that's what I used to do. I used to do massage therapy once a week.
Yep.
Once every 2 weeks. And the opposite week I would go to, an ART practitioner, chiropractic. And those two things together worked fairly well. My chiropractor has since stopped practicing in the local area, so I have to like find somebody else.
The next one is creams or Advils or anti-inflammatory
Okay, so so if you put on like a sports cream, right, like a Bengay or a Biofreeze, or you take ibuprofen or an anti-inflammatory, in the immediate, that's going to give you pain relief. That's what they're designed to do. It is a pain relieving mechanism. So there's that side of it. If you need to recover to perform now, those are phenomenal, right? If you're that games athlete and your legs are sore to the touch, like we talked about, you don't have the option of being like, I'm going to wait till Monday. So you got to go on the field. Yeah. So taking one of those things is great, but there's the obvious risk that you are masking the pain, right? And pain is an indicator that something's wrong. So in everyday training, that's not what we'd want to do. Kind of using the functional medicine analogy for this is if you're walking around, you have your foot hurting because you have a pebble in your shoe. You walk around with a pebble in your shoe for 3 months and your foot's really sore and it's building up blisters and it's ripping your foot apart. What you could do is take ibuprofen,
right?
You know, and it would help the pain,
yeah.
But it's not going to fix the issue. The better thing to do is to root the cause. What's causing the pain? There's a pebble in my shoe and remove the pebble. Same type of thing is like, okay, my shoulder's killing me. Well, instead of taking ibuprofen, let's figure out what we can do to make your shoulder better. And that's where you kind of get down these kind of like, so we're talking about like popping pills or putting on creams.
Yep.
There's two different schools of those things. The one is that it's pain masking. So that is mostly menthol in terms of the creams. That's what Biofreeze is. That's why you get the pain relieving because menthol numbs it. It's also the thing that smells a lot. In the pills, it's the pain relieving agent, which is the ibuprofen part of it. But there are other things that people pop, like turmeric, right? Like glucosamine, like creatine, like... And then creams, there's things like arnica and other things that allow for like healing type things to go on. So if your cream has things like that in it, like probably something that's not just masking pain, this could be helping you recover. Same thing with if you're taking like a supplement that's not for masking pain, but it is in order to lower inflammation. That's where I would say the two schools of thoughts of like putting on cream and popping pills, kind of like that's kind of where I would delineate the difference between the two.
Got it. Last one I have is meditation, which is not something we've talked about a ton.
Okay, but we've alluded to a little bit. Sure. So this is kind of like that psychological, how your body interprets outside stimulus, AKA stress, if you want to call it, right? And should I be raising cortisol and adrenaline and putting myself in this heightened state, my heart rate going up and my blood pressure rising to get me ready to perform? I either have to run away from danger or fight it. Or am I chilling with my tribe and chilling and allowing my body to just recover for the next time I have to go fight off that danger? Meditation is a really nice way when you're in an unnecessary, or if you're in a overly sensory environment where you're being overloaded, it's a way to bring you back down into that rest. It's a mechanism. It's a mechanistic tool. It's a thing that you can use to switch from fight or flight to rest and digest. It helps with the CNS response, obviously is what we're getting at, the third pillar of recovery. So whether that is something like an app like Headspace, whether that is something like box breathing, where you take 4 second breath in through the nose, hold for 4 seconds, second breath out, hold for 4 seconds, rinse, wash, repeat that 4 times. Okay, good. Relax, come back to it. Just trying to focus on your breath, that type of thing. Whatever you can do to get you out of that kind of like freak out mode back to chill. And what's cool about this is it can help for recovery. Okay. But, and certainly meditation is one of the practices that's used by a lot of high performers in their daily routines. The other cool thing is if you practice it a lot, call it meditation, call it mindfulness, call it, breathing, whatever you want to call it, and whatever your practice is, call it gratitude if you want to, I don't care. If you practice these things, what you can do is in a moment, you can get yourself in from an athletic performance standpoint into what has been defined as like the zone, right? Where you're not overthinking things. Interesting, yeah. You're letting your natural abilities just flow.
So you're sort of fighting the natural stress or anxiety.
Yeah. So if the environment is, let's say you're tasked with taking the last second shot for your basketball team mm-hmm. in the championship game and you're down by one. If you're like trying to get yourself jacked up for that, you might not perform as well as if you took an alternative route, which is try to chill yourself and let the 10,000 hours of practice you spent honing on your craft just flow. If you're thinking about, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get the inbound ball. I'm going to take three steps. I'm going to square my shoulders. I'm going to point my elbow at the end. I'm going to follow through, making sure I'm putting my fingers in the basket, aim for the back of the hoop. Like, you're not going to do as well as like, just like, I got this, man. Give me the ball.
Yep.
I got this.
Yep. Like, I remember we've talked about that in the story of Cole. This is a few years ago now, where he needed to win the last workout. And it was. I remember asking you if it was that a moment that he needed to calm down or he needed to fire himself up. And the workout itself sort of required or allowed him to be more fired up than calm down.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was my list. The last question I have for you is a lot of those are very nitty gritty, you know, like Normatex and saunas and a lot of things that I've never done because I guess maybe I've never taken my fitness or my pursuit of fitness that seriously. So where is the line between these are the things that you should be doing just as part of your pursuit of overall health and fitness? And where does you cross over the line to say you probably don't need to do that or you should do that if you're trying to get to the podium of a sanctional or whatever it is? Is there a clear delineation between and don't worry about that and no, you should be doing that?
I love that question. I don't think it's a clear delineation. I don't think it's a line. Mm. I think it's shades of gray.
Okay.
Right. So if you're coming to the gym one day a week, right, and it's like we have to pull tooth and nail to get you there, and it takes every bit of motivation you can to get to the gym one day a week, like, dude, don't worry about any of this. Like, it's not that big a deal. You know, if you're the type of person that's going to the gym 3 or 4 days a week, then maybe what we'll do is we'll do a little bit of active range of motion stuff before you train. Maybe we'll get on a foam roller. And then after you're done, maybe we'll jump on a bike for like 2-3 minutes just to flush things out a little bit. If you're going to the gym 5 days a week and fitness is a big part of your life, maybe you bring that practice into play, but you also try to play with you try to start worrying about your sleep and your nutrition a little more. Obviously, I almost want to leave those things out. Maybe what we'll do is we'll try to get some body work done once a month, right? If you're trying to go to the CrossFit Games and you're not doing all of these things in some form or fashion, you're leaving performance on the table.
Hey, thanks so much for listening this week. Thanks for listening all the way to the end of the episode. We appreciate it. If you are not yet subscribed, wherever you happen to be listening to this, that would be amazing. Subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or other podcast player to ensure you do not miss another episode. Speaking of, Ben and I will be back next week for a brand new episode of Chasing Excellence.